The search for survivors off the California coast has ended. NASA now says not one but two booster recovery chutes failed. And Atlantis is now scheduled for liftoff November 16th. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, November 2nd, 2009. The U.S. Coast Guard announced yesterday that its response to Thursday's mid-air collision between a Coast Guard HC-130 and an AH-1W Super Cobra helicopter off the California coast has officially shifted from rescue to recovery. A total of 9 people are now presumed to have died in the fiery collision about 15 miles east of San Clemente Island. Navy salvage ships will now focus on finding and recovering the major portions of the wreckage and the bodies. Rear Admiral Joseph Castillo, commander of the 11th Coast Guard District, told the San Diego Union-Tribune, quote, "Due to the wreckage we found, the nature of the collision, and the length of time since the crash, we've reached the conclusion that survival is no longer viable," unquote. The Associated Press reports the C-130 was engaged in a search and rescue mission involving a small boat missing since Wednesday. At the time that collision happened, about 7:50 p.m. Pacific time. NASA officials now say two of the three 150-foot parachutes designed to slow the descent of the Ares 1X booster failed during last week's test launch, causing it to be damaged when it hit the water. In comments to the Associated Press, mission manager Bob S. minimized the significance. Quote, "Don't play this too much. The parachute thing was like, hey, look at that. We're not worried about that. There's no investigation. There's no unusual thing we're doing. We're just going through our usual post-tests," unquote. He added that the powered portion of the flight looked rock solid, but said there will be no definitive results until all the data is analyzed, which may take several weeks. The booster arrived back at Kennedy Friday, following its recovery in the Atlantic. The Space Shuttle Atlantis's 11-day mission to the International Space Station now has a target launch date and time, Monday, November 16th at 2:28 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The day and time were nailed down Thursday at the conclusion of a flight readiness review at Kennedy Space Center. The STS-129 mission will focus on storing spare hardware on the exterior of the space station. The flight will include 3 spacewalks to install 2 truss platforms, which will hold spare parts to sustain station operations after the shuttle fleet is retired. Up next on ANN, MSP is ready to reopen 30 right. Airbus celebrates the first A380 delivery to a European airline. And Mitsubishi's MRJ will use doors from Germany. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 2nd. I'm Paul Plack. Officials at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport are happy to tell their neighbors that construction on runway 12 left 30 right is complete, and as soon as the FAA checks out the ILS, the runway will be back in service, ending the altered flight patterns and increased noise that started on August the 18th. The center section of the runway, which is 3,800 feet long, dated back to 1967 and has now been replaced. Jeff Hamill, executive director of the Metropolitan Airports Commission, commented, quote, "This was the last significant project in the $3.1 billion MSP 2010 expansion program. All pre-existing runway pavement has been replaced and a new 8,000-foot runway developed, providing ample airfield capacity for decades to come," unquote. The acceptance Friday by Air France of its first Airbus A380 makes the carrier the first in Europe to put the plane into regular service. It's the 20th A380 delivered by Airbus. Air France KLM CEO Pierre-Henri Goujon commented, quote, "Each A380 will enable Air France to save 12 to 15 million euros a year, which provides the company with means to withstand the crisis. Air France will therefore be able to offer customers even greater comfort while keeping costs under control. Furthermore, the performance of the A380 is in line with our environmental commitments," unquote. Air France was the first ever Airbus customer, receiving its first plane from the manufacturer in 1974. The Mitsubishi Regional Jet, currently under development, will have doors designed and manufactured by Eurocopter's Business Center Airplane Door Systems, based in Donauwörth, Germany. Dr. Wolfgang Schoeder, CEO of Eurocopter Deutschland, is appreciative. Quote, "We are very proud to continue the long and successful relationship between Eurocopter and the Japanese industry on aircraft doors and helicopters with this new project," unquote. The Eurocopter division has been building aircraft doors for more than 20 years. Mitsubishi says its MRJ should significantly cut fuel consumption, noise, and emissions, which it hopes will improve competitiveness and profitability for airlines. Still ahead, the Air Force announces proposed F-35 bases. A wrecked C-130 becomes an organ donor. And United celebrates what for some is a sad milestone. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, November 2nd. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. Air Force has released a list of U.S. bases under consideration for the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. Training will be considered at Boise and Tucson Air Guard stations and at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, Holloman AFB in New Mexico, and Luke AFB in Arizona. Candidate bases for operations include guard stations at Burlington, Vermont and Jacksonville, Florida, Hill Air Force Base in Utah, Mountain Home AFB in Idaho, and Shaw AFB and McIntyre Air Guard Base in South Carolina. Now that the list of candidate bases has been released, the formal environmental impact analysis process and site assessments will begin. That allows communities around each candidate base to provide input. Preferred locations will be announced in late spring of 2010, with final basing decisions anticipated in early 2011. We've all been horrified by stories of high-dollar military aircraft parts being ground up for scrap in the name of security, but that's not always the way it happens. U.S. and Iraqi airmen moved parts of a wrecked C-130 Hercules transport from Sadr Air Base in Iraq to new Al-Muthanna Air Base, where they're going to be used as training aids for Iraqi aircraft maintainers. The parts removed include the left wing, a dry bay, and fuel cell sections, landing gear struts, and electrical components. They'll be modified to render them non-operational before they're deployed as training aids. U.S. Air Force Captain Martin Hagg, new Al-Muthanna maintenance advisor, commented, quote, "It's always better to get hands-on training than it is to get just theory training. If you can actually get your hands on it, if you can cut wires and rework wires, crawl inside a fuel cell, that always gives you a higher fidelity of training," unquote. Hagg added that it's not just the Iraqis who will benefit. Quote, "The Americans will benefit on a personal level by working with the Iraqi Air Force and getting to know them," unquote. And finally today, United Airlines last week celebrated a milestone some in the company might consider sad. No, it's not the 6 millionth YouTube view of United Breaks Guitars. That's still a few weeks off. United has officially retired the last of its Boeing 737s with a final flight from Dulles to San Francisco last Wednesday. That flight landed at every United hub in the U.S. United first began flying the 737 in 1968, and the Chicago Tribune reports the airline was a key player in making the jet the best-selling airliner of all time. But United grounded the planes last year as a cost-saving measure, while newer Airbus A320s were kept online and in the air. While the 737 era has apparently ended at United, the rest of the world still loves the plane. Low-cost carriers Southwest Airlines in the U.S. and WestJet in Canada both have nothing but 737s in their fleets, and Boeing continues to sell an updated version of the plane around the world and reports more than 6,000 ordered since it was first introduced. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves fears the U.S. lead in general aviation could go the way of our lead in cars and steel if we're not careful. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.